Thank you. Gets a preacher fired up when you have a nice anthem before you stand in the pulpit. I have a question. What kind of person deserves Jesus' help? Let's see what Luke might have to offer. The gospel reading for this morning, for this Sunday, is Luke chapter 7, beginning of verse 1. It's the story of the faith of the centurion, of Jesus healing the centurion's servant. Hear the word of God. When Jesus had finished saying all this in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. There a centurion's servant, whom his master valued highly, was sick and about to die. The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him, "This man deserves to have you do this, because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue." So Jesus went with them. Jesus was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, "Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I say to this one, go, and he goes. And that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. And turning to the crowd following him, he said, "I tell you, I have not found such great faith even in Israel." Then the men who had been sent returned to the house and found the servant well. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. What kind of person deserves Jesus' help? It would appear that it is one who loves God and country. This describes the centurion of Capernaum. Now, centurions were Roman leaders. They were military leaders who had charge over 100 soldiers. They were powerful and authoritative and strong and often cruel. They were hated by the Jews. They hated the presence of the Roman oppressors in their land, and especially the centurion leaders. But the attitude of the Jewish leaders, the elders in Capernaum, was just the opposite. They liked their centurion. In fact, they liked him so much, they came to Jesus on his behalf in his time of need to enlist Jesus' help. The centurion's favorite servant was dying. And knowing of Jesus' reputation as a healer, the Jewish elders and the centurion came to Jesus to see what he could do. Jewish elders, you need to translate that as the town big shots, came to Jesus. They got out the heavyweights to come to Jesus and ask for help for this guy. And I think Jesus was probably really surprised when they came to him asking for help for a centurion. I can imagine him saying, "Really? You want me to help a centurion? Is this a joke?" They said, "No, no joke. This man deserves to have you heal his servant. He loves our people," or that would be our nation, "and he built our synagogue." What they mean here is that he not only directed the construction of it, he likely paid for it. The implication is that this man loved Israel and loved their God. "Mr. Jesus," they said, "this guy deserves your help." Jesus goes with them. And before they can get to the centurion's house, a group of his friends come to Jesus, stop Jesus in his tracks, and say what the centurion has instructed them to say, "I've got no claim on you. Don't hassle yourself. I don't deserve your attention. Lord, just say the word, and my servant will be healed. Now, wait a minute. What's going on here? Does the centurion deserve Jesus' favor or not? The Jewish elders come to Jesus and say, help this guy. He deserves it. He loves our God. He loves our country. Help him. The centurion says to Jesus, I don't deserve your help, but please, heal my servant anyway. At first glance, this story looks like a miracle story. Another story about Jesus exerting miraculous powers. But it's not so much about the miracle. It's a story about faith and grace. The centurion's faith and God's grace. The centurion sends his friends to Jesus because he knows that Jews are not to enter the home of a Gentile. But as Matthew reports also, this centurion runs out to Jesus before he gets to his house and says to him, Lord, heal my servant. You do not have to come all the way to my house. You are a man like me. We both have authority. I say to a soldier, go, and he goes. To another, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it. Lord, just say the word, and my servant will be healed. The centurion is a strong, authoritative man who has a deep faith in Jesus. Both in Jesus, what Jesus can do and what Jesus wants to do. On the one hand, we have the Jewish elders who say, help this guy, he deserves it, he does good works. And on the other hand, we have this centurion who says, Lord, Lord, he says Lord to Jesus. He's the Roman leader, the strong man, but nonetheless, he addresses Jesus by saying, Lord, say the word, my servant will be healed. It is as profound a confession of faith as you will find in the Bible. Jesus says, I have not found such faith anywhere in Israel as what this Roman, this Gentile, this centurion of all people is expressing. The centurion returns home and finds his servant well. It's about faith, not works. And it is because of grace. The elders say Jesus should be gracious to this centurion because he does good works. The centurion says, I do not deserve it, but please give me grace anyway. Hebrews says faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things unseen. This is exactly what this centurion displays. He expresses his conviction of Jesus' lordship in the hope of his grace. And out of this faith, out of his faith, the centurion begs for grace from the Lord and receives it. It is Luke's point, along with the rest of the New Testament, that grace is freely given by God. It is not earned. It is not something we deserve. Frankly, the New Testament says we don't deserve it, but we get it anyways. The only work that needs to be done for God's grace was done by Jesus, as pointed out in the children's message. It's all grace for us. In a magazine article, Paul Francisco tells that when he was a child, the church that his family worshiped in on communion Sundays would have two offerings. The first offering would be received early in the service, and it went for the business of the church. The second offering was received just before the Lord's Supper was celebrated, and it went for benevolences. He said one Sunday morning, one communion Sunday morning when he was 9 years old, his mom gave him two dimes and instructed him to put one in the first offering and the other in the second offering. And when the plates were passed at the appropriate time, he put the dime in the first offering and then the second dime in the benevolence offering. Shortly after that, was the Lord's Supper was celebrated, and his pew was instructed to come forward to the rail to receive communion, and he stood up with everybody else in the pew and started to move forward, and his mom stopped him in his tracks and said, no, you can't have communion yet. And he said, why not? I paid for it. This child's reply reflects a very adult and incorrect attitude that many people who have been lifetime church attenders still bear. We think we can earn God's grace. But the point Luke makes in recording this story of Jesus healing the centurion's servant is that grace is an unmerited free gift just given to us. The centurion understands this before his Jewish friends do. If grace is free and not earned, then what should you do? Take it. Take it like an unexpected, incredibly wonderful gift. God is offering you his grace. Take it. Then be grateful. One of the classic statements of faith in our Presbyterian Book of Confessions is the Heidelberg Catechism. The Heidelberg Catechism is divided into three sections. Part one is titled Our Guilt. Part two is titled God's Grace. And part three is titled Our Gratitude. Now, the Heidelberg Catechism teaches on a variety of things, including the Lord's Prayer and other issues of the church, but it also teaches about the Ten Commandments. Which of the three sections does it teach on the Ten Commandments? Would it be the first section, guilt, the middle section, grace, or the third section, gratitude? Well, it would be the first section, guilt, right? No. It is the third section, gratitude. And it's intentionally put there to show us that though we are guilty, God is gracious, and our call, therefore, is to be grateful. And the way we express our gratefulness is by seeking to live in a manner that pleases God. We don't live in a manner to please God in order to get grace. We have grace given to us through Jesus Christ. As a result, we seek to live in a manner that pleases God. Do good works to express our gratitude. And I think probably the very best way that we can express our gratitude for God's grace is to do exactly what we're doing now, worshiping God. Adoration of God is love of God in response to God's love of us. Jesus showed us God's love of us, and he told us the greatest thing we could ever do is to love God in response. Nothing says love of God like worship of God. In another magazine article, Stu Weber tells of his three sons, and he describes his first two sons as being high-powered. He said they were both all-conference athletes and excellent students who were National Honor Society. But he says As a father, I worried about our caboose, his third son, Ryan. He is the most sensitive of the three. It is difficult to follow two accomplished older brothers. He said, so I spent a lot of time with Ryan, he says, in the outdoors. We would hike and camp and fish and hunt. He said, now when you're in the outdoors a lot, a penknife is a significant tool. You find a use for a penknife over and over again when you're out of doors. So he said, so I bought a penknife and gave it to Ryan. His older brothers had to ask him to use it when we were in the out of doors. And it was his status in our family was that he was the keeper of the blade. One year, when Weber reached a milestone birthday, his family planned a big party for him. Friends, neighbors, co-workers all pitched in to plan this big party. His birthday arrived, and early in the afternoon, Weber was sitting in his study at home working when he felt a presence behind him. You know how you can just sort of sometimes sense that somebody's there? And he turned around, and it was Ryan holding a small package in his hand. It was his birthday present for his dad, and he wanted to give it to him just one-on-one before the crowd came. So he gave it to his father, to Stu, who opened it up, and it was, as you've no doubt guessed, Ryan's penknife. It was the deepest expression of love that he could offer, his prized knife. When we want to express our love of God, we offer our prized possessions. And I think most people, our prized possessions are our time, our money, and our full attention. Giving somebody any one of those is a gift of love. And it is in worship that we give all three. And we give it over to God. We give God our full attention. We put our money in the offering plate. And we give God our time. I drive up here from St. Pete. I pass a lot of people on the road. Many of them are not going to church. But we have set aside this time for God. In worship, it's a concrete way that we can express love of God with heart, with soul, with mind, and with strength as we gather to worship God. When it comes to expressing gratitude for grace, nothing beats worship. Friends, here's the bottom line. If you remember nothing else from this morning's sermon, remember this. Grace is God's free gift to you through Jesus Christ. You don't have to earn it. In fact, you can't. You'll never deserve it. It wouldn't be grace if you did. Grace is God's unmerited free gift to you. Take it and be grateful for it. Let the people of God say, Amen.